The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
Now, this week marks National Grief Awareness Week. It's in its sixth year, and the Irish Hospice Foundation is running the campaign, especially during January, which is a time that can be difficult for many people who have been bereaved. Broadcaster Venetia Quick, you might know from the Grief Pod, is with me in studio to talk about all of this. And I'm also joined by Amy Gibney, National Grief in the Workplace Lead at the Irish Hospice Foundation. So good morning and welcome to you both.
Morning.
Good morning.
Now, Venetia, you are something of an oracle on grief, but it is based on your own personal experience.
Yes, it is. My husband, Martin, died quite suddenly, almost 8 years ago, next month. He'd been diagnosed with cancer in the September.
It was serious.
It was stage four. So it was manageable, but not curable. It was generally, there was talk of 5 years and he got 5 months. So,
but it wasn't, I mean, the nature of the cancer was obviously affecting his
yeah,
body.
So basically it was lung cancer when he died and they obviously did the biopsy after or the autopsy afterwards. It had spread like to pretty much everywhere.
And putting pressure on the heart.
So the way it was positioned, the tumour was positioned, was it was like a donut in the centre of the donut. So what actually happened was one Sunday morning, I had just left to take my then five-year-old to his first football practice training. And my then 12-year-old and 7-year-old were at home and Martin started feeling unwell and he collapsed. And actually the way, because of where the tumour was, it put pressure on his heart and he had a heart attack at home. So my 12-year-old...
The lads had to cope.
Yeah, so my 7-year-old was with him in the kitchen. So he called his older brother. His older brother rang the emergency services. They talked him through what to do. So he kept trying to keep him going while they waited for the ambulance to arrive. And I had my phone on silent at the time because it was the weekend. I was trying to be more present. myself and my youngest son stopped to talk to a friend on the way to the park, and an ambulance and a fire brigade like screamed by. And Casper, who was 5 at the time, turned around and said, "They're in a terrible hurry." And we realised afterwards they were actually going to our house. And when I looked at my phone, then, of course, there was all these missed calls. So we got home. He was taken to Vincent's. And unfortunately, there was nothing really they could do.
So you knew that he had a terminal illness, but you thought you had time. And in the event, it was a sudden death.
We did, exactly. So the night actually before, that was a Sunday, so the night before was a Saturday evening, and Martin had a great sense of humour and winning streak was on the background. He was having, you know, he was in great form. He'd always had this running joke when there was somebody sort of up at the spinny thing with their coat on. Sure, that'll be of no benefit to you when you get outside. So there was all this sort of jokey humour going on. He was in great form. We actually that evening started talking about perhaps maybe it might be time to do, you know, the big memorable trip with the kids.
The bucket list.
Yeah, the bucket list. And maybe because they were sort of young, Felix had actually just started first year. So we sort of went, the other two were young enough, maybe we'll take them out for a couple of months. We'll do the bucket list. And then I was like, well, how will we pay for it? And he was sort of like, well, the insurance. And I was like, yeah, I don't know. And then he turned around and said, there's only one problem. I was like, what's that? What if I don't die? You know, so that's the sort of form he was in. So we couldn't actually predict that time the next day
and
he
then,
was going to be gone.
You know, doing your podcast, why did you decide to share, if you like, and help people?
Because cope? I suppose, well, actually, the podcast is a year old today. We're over 40 episodes in. And I think the reason behind it was when you're in that stage of bereavement and grief, and even so many years on, it never really goes away. It's always with you, or it could be with your kids and it could be with the people you know. And I think the idea, well, the idea behind the podcast was to help other people, give them somewhere to go, help them know they're not alone, but also help those who are trying to support those who are grieving. And in a myriad of different experiences. So it mightn't be just a partner or a parent. It could be a child. It could be familicide. It could be homicide. It could be ambiguous loss. Like, there's so many areas of grief.
We're a colleague. There's a text here. My dad passed away on January the 6th, 7 years ago. At work, my work colleagues were great. It was a subtle thing, like a cup of tea appearing on the desk. Such a small gesture, but so comforting. It's very hard to return to normal after the grief. That's from Anne. Now, Amy Gibney is National Grief in the Workplace Lead at the Irish Hospice Foundation. That's a perfect cue in for you and what you do. Because sometimes people return from work and people who don't know them intimately just see them back and say, oh, how was your holiday?
Exactly.
And that's not what they were doing.
And, you know, we run a national program for grief in the workplace. It's often the forgotten facet of workplace well-being, let's just say. So, you know, when people come back to work after a bereavement, they're extremely vulnerable. And when we think about how, you know, the life course goes, marriages, births, the celebrations around all of that, and there's still a stigma around death, and there's still a fear over saying the wrong thing. So part of our job, you know, in Irish Hospice Foundation is sort of dispelling some of those myths and getting people more comfortable talking about it. Because if you think about, you know, Venetia's story there, that, you know, can turn your life upside down. And we spoke on the podcast about the fact that you might leave work a mother and return to work no longer a mother or a spouse or have a father or a mother. So you're a changed person. And I think the workplace needs to accommodate that.
And you deal with employers and employees both. And for an employer, what does an employer need to do if they're aware? Because they may not, you know, the old story, my granny died, and that's the fourth granny that's died on you. You know, that kind of way, people using a distant bereavement as an excuse for not being at work. So how is the employer to structure something that will alert them to the fact that something is wrong, to know about it? That's the first thing. If you don't know about it, you can't do anything. So what should an employer do?
You actually said something really, really important there. And it's actually, first of all, having a culture where people can feel safe to talk about what they're going through. So actually identifying the grief is the first step. I talk to a lot of workplaces. I talk to a lot of employees. And there's a small minority always that might take advantage of any policy. But I don't think that warrants not having an appropriate bereavement policy. And you ask what they can do. And really what they can start with is have a bereavement policy that not only gives employees a leave entitlement when something happens, but that's only one part of the journey. You know, grief is, it's not linear, it's unpredictable. And that employee will need support when they come back from a health and safety perspective. And what we know is that if people are supported well, they can actually continue to work, which is so important when you're grieving, to have time to be distracted and stay well while they're grieving. But if they're not treated well, people will often describe leaving an organisation, you know. So there's huge costs in that, you know.
I mean, from, you know, the personal point of view between the two colleagues, for example, people might be afraid that if I say something about their loss, whatever that loss might be, they'll burst into tears and we'll have, you know, a big scene on the floor of the office or the factory or whatever it is, you know, and they're afraid that, because, I mean, people are often in bereavement, close to tears pretty much all the time.
And that's it. But I think the important thing is we have a model called Acknowledge, Validate and Support. And we go in and talk to workplaces about it. It is so important to acknowledge it and let those tears flow. You know, it's not up to us to decide whether or not someone should cry. And if you're thinking I'm going to make that person upset, exactly what you said there, Pat, they're already upset. They're already carrying it. And I do want to just say one thing, because I think the stories highlight the most important thing. We were out at a corporate and one of the leaders stood up there and said, you know, on one hand, I was broken. And people kept handing me tissues when I'd cry. But on the other hand, I was working away. So there were kind of two sides of me in operation at the same time. And I thought that was just a lovely way of describing what we're going through in the months and years after a significant bereavement and loss.
You're nodding your head there. I mean, the impact of of your situation when you told everyone what happened.
Yeah, so I'm just actually, what Amy was saying, it's like a double-sided coin, because in one way, there are days where you're trying to hold it together, but the other ways, it's almost like a relief. It's a distraction to be in work and just not be thinking about, you know, the empty space at home. I mean, I think in both my situations, I was working in two different places at the time, one in the morning and one in the afternoon. And I just asked both my bosses, I just said, I'm coming back on Monday and I don't want to talk about it. But in one of my workplaces, there was six of us sitting in a room, and it was sort of the elephant in the room. And one girl just got up and said, I'm really sorry, I have to give you a hug. And that actually was just the perfect way to handle it, because it just made everybody sort of acknowledged it, but we didn't need to go into it if I didn't feel like it.
A couple of texts coming in. After experiencing grief, I returned to work too early, looking back on it now. Also, I do remember leaving my desk and crying in the bathroom for 10 minutes and then back to the desk. Looking back, I should have said to my employer, I'm having a bad, sad day. No big drama. Just say it to someone. That's all. Tears flow and then dry. At that question of bereavement leave, do employers anywhere in Ireland offer this?
So,
I mean, they have a thing called compassionate leave.
Yeah.
Which is in a lot of companies and in, I think, the civil service, the public service, compassionate leave.
And that can be related to bereavement and beyond. But then there is also bereavement leave. You know, the terms can be used interchangeably at times. But we do know that the public sector generally have an entitlement to bereavement leave. However, we don't know, you know, across Ireland what that looks like. But we could assume that a lot of employers will do the right thing. But you have to know that there are industries where it is harder. You know, there's hospitality, there's retail. And it's so important, I think, that employees have a basic minimum statutory bereavement leave.
This text says, I lost a family member and my manager said, we're short-staffed, so you have to keep working. I can give you a couple of hours off for the funeral, but don't go to the meal afterwards. We don't know how close that family member was, because it could be someone who is distantly related but very close to you.
Exactly. It could be a brother-in-law that you're so close to, but there's an assumption, oh, it's just a brother-in-law. So we would caution that, you know. And one thing we would say for that person who even texted in there is that, what if they got a little bit help in those early days? How would their journey look then, you know? So grief can be masked in sick leave later on. It can be masked in illness. And we know that illness is a big problem for workplaces. So it's just thinking of things like that.
This is an interesting text from Lorna. For a lot of people who are bereaved, the only part of their lives that has not changed beyond recognition is their working life. And they want to keep that. For a lot of people, work can be a sanctuary where loss is not the main topic of conversation.
Absolutely. And I think it just needs to be a topic when someone needs it to be. But it allows us, I spoke earlier about that distraction, restoration, time away from that real sadness is actually really healing. And we usually move between that and our feelings of grief, you know. So the workplace can accommodate that, provided it has accommodations in place to help you when things are hard.
Another similar comment. My teenage son died by suicide some years ago. I had 5 days of bereavement leave. My colleagues saved me. My wider family were great too, but they were all struggling as well.
Yeah.
So the colleagues who were the rocks, who were not struggling, they were just there.
Yeah. And you're leaving your home where, like exactly what that person said, everyone in the family is struggling, you know, and you get to go to work and have social support, which we know is one of the number one things when someone is grieving. And can I add one more thing?
Sure.
You know, our theme for National Grief Awareness really is to show up and be present. And you said earlier, you know, some people are worried about, what do I say? It isn't always about saying. It's about that text you got there, about the practical things, the cup of tea, showing up, making sure somebody isn't feeling lonely. It's being present, you know, and I think that is the takeaway. Don't avoid the person, you know, make time for them, be there for them in the months and the years that follow.
And
you don't
necessarily have to find, you know, elaborate words.
Yes.
You can just touch someone on the shoulder and say, okay.
Yeah, exactly. A gesture, a nod, a touch, as long as it's not, you know, unwarranted or somebody isn't comfortable talking about it and they've said that. It's just so important to let them know in the ways that feels right, you know.
Yeah. And when you are bereaved, I remember when my father died all those years ago, and He had been ill for a long time, and it was a slow enough death and very much expected at the end. But I met somebody shortly, literally an hour after my father had died. I'd come from the hospital, and he said, "You're looking a bit glum today. What happened?" And thoughtlessly, I said, "My father just died." He didn't know what to do. Because I just told him the truth. I told him why I looked glum and down in the dumps. He didn't know how to react.
Yeah. And I think that's sort of what certainly the podcast aims to do, is to help those people. Because it is like, we don't always know what to do or what to say or how to react. And I think if, you know, if you're better, if you're better equipped in situations, just in general, if you give it a little bit of thought, because you're always going to meet somebody who's lost somebody, or you're always going to meet a colleague.
Well, we're all only going the one way.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So I think...
none of us is getting out of here alive.
No.
That, you know, just in general, if people are better equipped, and maybe give a little bit of thought about how would they feel or how would they react if they were in that position, then we might all help each other a little better.
Yeah, it's funny when you think about it. I heard someone say this a few years ago, and it's always stuck in my memory. 100 years from now, nobody alive today will probably be alive then.
Yeah. Oh my God, yes.
You know, now, okay, we're all going to live to be more than 100, we're told. But by and large, it's true that the population of the world completely replaces itself in 100 years.
And, you know, it's our 40th anniversary this year in IHF. And one of the things that we're highlighting, and not in a depressing way, you know, we're all living longer, we're aging, is that, but the number of deaths is going to increase by 40% in the next 20 years. So, you know, we need to get on board with the fact that there will be an even greater need for bereavement and grief support.
Venetia, where do people find the Grief Pod?
It's on SoundCloud and all the podcast platforms, and also we have an Instagram account at Grief Pod Series.
Very good. And if people want to get in touch with your resources, Amy?
Yeah, so hospicefoundation.ie, and they'll see all the events going on for National Grief Awareness Week.
Venetia Quick, broadcaster and podcast host of the Grief Pod, and Amy Gibney, National Grief in the Workplace Lead at the Irish Hospice Foundation. Thank you both very much. We'll take a break.
Thank you so much.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.